from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh yeah, the vibes are up on a Monday. We have a whole gang of new drops to use because the Thunder and the Timberwolves, or excuse me, the Nuggets and the Timberwolves gave us some outstanding sound from their post-game press conferences yesterday.
I love it. I'm here for all of the sound drops.
Yeah, I've got. I'm not going to play them yet because we need to play the actual sound first.
Yeah.
So we have the context of them. But yeah, I was just sitting there yesterday, just bookmarking tweets of all the funny things that I wanted sound of. So we'll have that for you coming up a little bit later on. We also have a ton of Kings and Jonas Valanciunas stuff to get into today. That was a story that came out over the weekend. The Kings are the betting favorites to land the New Orleans Pelicans big man. Take that for whatever it's worth. I tend to look at betting markets for those kind of things because I do think it's interesting. They can be misleading, but it's worth keeping an eye on. So we will talk about that and what it means as we continue our Kings off-season list building, going division by division, team by team, and figuring out what players might be available for the Kings this off-season. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Kyle.
Chilling, bro. I'm hanging in there.
This is an exciting day. We've got so much to talk about. There was some really, really good basketball this weekend. I thought it was fun.
It was great. So which Game 7 was more surprising to you? You have the Timberwolves coming back from 15 down on the road to beat the defending champion Nuggets 98-90, the third road victory of the series, or is it the Indiana Pacers who not only went into Madison Square Garden in a Game 7, but beat down the Knicks? 130-109 was the final there.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Minnesota winning just because you had the champs who had a big lead.
Mm-hmm.
On their home court.
It was over.
It looked like it was over.
It's done.
It looked like they were, like what we've talked about, inevitable.
Yes.
And then they just couldn't put them away. Although I saw the switch. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's not good. I think they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at the other game, I mean, like, look, Indiana went in there and beat them. But you also, you know, OG Anunoby played less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough one.
And then you had Brunson break his hand.
Yeah.
And miss the final whatever. I thought Dante DiVincenzo was incredible.
He's ridiculous.
Just giving them any glimmer of hope that they had.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could make an argument for the Pacers, but I can't because that series was so close kind of the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish I could sit here and talk about how I'm so shocked by how the Pacers went in. I kind of, frankly, I was definitely a little surprised that they just controlled that game really from the outset.
Yeah.
And I know the Knicks at one point cut it to 7, but the Pacers got it comfortably back to double digits pretty quickly after the Knicks made a run. And they just kind of controlled that game from start to finish. But had you told me, here's the thing, and this is why I agree with you. I agree that the Timberwolves is the more surprising one. Because if you had told me before the Pacers game, hey, FYI, the Pacers win this one by a bunch. It's like, okay, well, OG obviously couldn't be effective.
Yep.
Jalen Brunson might have run out of gas. He ended up getting hurt. But maybe Jalen Brunson didn't have a great game and ran out of gas.
Hart was injured coming in.
Josh Hart banged up. Probably they were talking about like Josh Hart and OG potentially being out. And both of them tried to play. So it's like, okay, I can see the map. I can see. If you had told me, yeah, hey, the Nuggets are going to lead this game by 20. I'd been like, oh, okay, well, that's a wrap then.
Yeah.
And eventually the Timberwolves, they were up by as many as 10 in the second half. They went at 98-90. Their defense in the second half was crazy. They gave up 37 points in the entire second half while scoring 60.
You know, like we're waiting for a moment for the defensive team. Like they've shown it that the first two games of the series, they showed how good they were defensively mm-hmm. throughout the year. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, okay, adjustments have been made. Things going back and forth, all that stuff. I thought when they lost three games in a row in the middle of the series that it was over.
Yep.
And then to watch a team literally growing in like in front of your eyes, you're seeing the growth that everybody hopes to see from their team,
mm-hmm.
like on the biggest stage, and just systematically find their footing 1 minute after another.
Yes.
And even to have, you know, Anthony Edwards have a horrible shooting night, 6 of 24 from the field,
yep.
2 of 10 from three, only scored 16 points. But to have all of these other players step up, Jane McDaniels took just such a tremendous leap in that game.
Insane.
Like him going to the basket, like, what are we doing here?
Insane.
Yeah, I thought it was spectacular.
Yeah, Jane McDaniels in the second half, 3 for 3 from the field, 2 of 2 from beyond the arc. Anthony Edwards found his shot a little bit down the stretch. Karl Anthony Towns was outstanding yesterday. I have given that guy more grief than anybody on that team.
Yeah.
And he was really, really good yesterday. He goes 8 of 14, just 1 of 6 from three. The Timberwolves as a team didn't shoot it great. But we talk about this with Sacramento all the time. It's creating offense through your defense mm-hmm. and getting stops and getting out and running and not letting the opposing defense get set. You're going to get open looks. You're going to get to the lane. I was the way they not only came out in the third quarter, but then sustained that through the final 24 minutes. It's not supposed to go that way. It's not that's not. We've seen the Denver Nuggets just kind of cruise in this series. We've seen teams before where in the Timberwolves spot where, okay, you've been to the playoffs, but you know what? The champs are the champs for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They have that pedigree, and it just didn't. It felt like all the things that we know, all the givens in a playoff series just got flipped on their ear. Good for the Timberwolves.
Man. Yeah, totally good. You know, they figured out once again how to take away Aaron Gordon, and
yep.
that was a huge, huge moment. So he only goes 2 of 5 in 42 minutes.
Yep.
Michael Porter Jr. just didn't show up. I thought Michael Porter Jr. made so many egregious mistakes on both ends of the court. He was slow to rotate.
Mm-hmm.
He was out of position all the time on the defensive end. And then his ill-advised shots were just horrible, just like so overwhelmed by the moment. And I'm like, man, you have been here before.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I thought he was just a hot mess.
It was as if he was like, I'm due to make one eventually.
Yes.
I'm going to get rolling here eventually. And said, that's not your role, man.
Yeah.
You're not, hey, I got to get myself going guy. That's not what you're supposed to do on this team. And I felt like, over the final like 15 minutes maybe, it felt like every time Michael Porter Jr. wound up shooting it, it's like, that's a win for the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
The Timberwolves will take that.
And the same with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I thought he took like running and gunning threes that didn't make any sense. Like,
yeah.
what are you doing?
They panicked. That game was there for the taking with like 6 minutes to go, 5-6 minutes to go. And for Denver, it was like panic time. Like you said, so many rushed threes,
mm-hmm.
so many looks in transition where it's like, God, you could get to the basket. You have
yeah.
plenty of time to go get a layup and then try and get a stop. But they were very out of character.
Who was calling that game?
On TNT?
Yeah.
That was
Was it Reggie Miller? I can't remember who it was, but...
Yeah, I think it was, I think it was Reggie and Kevin Harlan.
The analyst said when Rudy Gobert fouls out and they put in Karl Anthony Towns, well, they're bringing in Towns, who's... He's got five fouls, but, you know, he's their best post defender anyways. I'm like...
Yeah, yeah. They said he was the best defender against Jokic.
I'm like, wait a sec.
He's been the most effective at defending Jokic.
Yeah, I'm like, wait. You have the defensive player of the year there. Like, what are we doing here? And to be honest, I thought Naz Reid was phenomenal against Jokic. Like, there are so many times where he just took... he took away the weird flop... the weird flip shot that Jokic has in the key that's almost always automatic. He just did such a good job.
That's just one of those things that you learn about players when you play them night in and night out. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was Kevin Harlan, Jamal Crawford, and Reggie Miller. That's right.
Okay.
That's what happens when you watch most games on mute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. I was already in. I said it on Friday. Regardless of the outcome in Game 7, I'm in on the Timberwolves moving forward. All the questions I have about Rudy Gobert and all the questions I have about Karl Anthony Towns or any concern I might have had about Anthony Edwards, not a lot. I'm in on them as a contender moving forward. And now, after that, man, I don't know if I'm more in on the Timberwolves or if I'm now more down on the Nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, that's gonna be the problem for the Nuggets. Like, how do you recover from this? How do you rebuild? Because again, we all know, like, cap wise and everything else, they're just like everyone else. They're up against it. They're
their
in the luxury
tax. Kind of is what it is.
Yeah, and it's like, well, how do you improve? How do you find guys? And I guess you're gonna have some natural growth from Christian Brown, and maybe you get one or two of their other guys hiding on the bench, Watson or Zeke Nnaji to step up, but like that team is kind of built, and that's who they are right now, and it's going to be difficult.
The thing is, though, and this is where I don't want to overreact necessarily, because Minnesota might just be the only team. There's been that whole thing this entire series about Tim Connelly, right? Tim Connelly was in Denver. He was the architect of this Denver team, and then he went to Minnesota and built a team to destroy what he had built in Denver. So maybe Minnesota is just the only team that's capable of doing this.
That's kind of what Jokic led, like his comments after he's like, this team is built to beat us.
Yeah, they're our rival.
Yeah.
They're built to beat us.
Yeah, they are built to beat us. And he went on to say just how impressed he was with almost everyone there, including, I think Mike Conley. He said, you know, people forget about him, but he said he's one of my favorite players. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's the most underrated player in the NBA, and he's been for a long time.
I think his return for games 6 and 7 were a huge reason that Minnesota won those games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's just, like, he's not going to put, what was he, yesterday? 3 for 10, he was 3 of 5 from 3, had 10 points, 4 assists, a couple of steals, 8 rebounds for Mike Conley, but just that steadying presence. You could see in game 5 when he was out, the Timberwolves just had nothing, like, no idea what to do offensively.
Oh, totally.
In crunch time.
Yeah, anytime, like, it got sticky, like, anytime the game slowed down, they were in trouble.
It was like, Ant, please, do something.
Yeah, somebody just create one-on-one. Like, who's got it?
Yeah, that's not going to fly.
No.
Really, really interested to see that Mavs-Timberwolves Western Conference Finals. Pacers-Celtics is our Eastern Conference Finals. Shocker, dude. Just for the Pacers to make this kind of run, because I was mostly in the camp with you that, yeah, this is a nice story. They make the playoffs. That's great for them. But yeah, they're going to run into the Bucks. But then, hey, you know what? Sneak past the Bucks. Oh, get the Knicks. Oh, you know what? Sneak past the Knicks. And here they are. I think they're probably more likely to be the Hawks of 2021 when the Hawks made a deep run and then got to where they are. I think they're probably closer to that than a legitimate long-term contender, but I'm not after what happened yesterday. I'm definitely not writing them off moving forward.
No, you have to at least give them their respect. I mean,
shout out to Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah, he showed up big. He showed up big in a couple of big moments late.
Yeah, he did.
So it's good to see him like grow through the playoff experience as well.
Yeah. Really, really fun couple of conference finals matchups coming up. We'll talk about those as we get closer. Let's talk about the Mavs in Oklahoma City, because there's some big picture stuff that came out of that series that I would like to get to as it relates to the Kings, and then we'll get to our Kings offseason discussions as well. Plenty of NBA playoffs, plenty of Kings, all coming up right here on ESPN. Oh, and the 49ers started OTAs today. Oh, we might get into that as well. Right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I'm Kyle, he's James. Shout out to Jiffy Lube. They sponsor the program. The Mavs beat Oklahoma City 117-116 over the weekend in Game 6. They avoid a Game 7 in that series. The Mavs punched their ticket to the Western Conference Finals. Really fun game. Before I have a big picture thing I want to get to. Did you think it was a foul on Shea? So PJ Washington going to shoot three with the Mavs down one. Tie game? Mavs down one?
I think Mavs were down one.
Yeah, because they won by one and he made two. That's right. So Mavs down one. He goes to shoot a three. Gets fouled by Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yep.
Goes to the line, hits the first two, misses the third intentionally to run the clock. Ball game over. Man, I think that's one of those plays that the reason it's such a question for me was because of the scenario.
Yeah.
But if that exact play happens in the first quarter, I don't think I even think about it. I don't think I go, ooh, that was a tough call. That was the wrong call.
Well, I think it's something that we saw called this season, like in weird times more than we ever had before, where if you get the ball first, then you're allowed to like hit somebody.
Yeah, you just maul them after you hit the ball.
So... Like, it seems like it's strange that you were able to, like, change the rule. Like, you got all ball, and then it, you know, his hand slid off and grabbed it. It hit his arm. I get it. I just don't know. It feels like, it's kind of like, what did you call the foul on?
Right.
Because if you called the foul on the all ball, then it doesn't matter what happens afterwards, whistle blow.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And so that adds another element. So if you were wrong, you were wrong. It felt like we were wrong, but we're not wrong. And so we're gonna call it the way we called it, even though you got all ball first. So I think in that situation, I would have had a tough time calling it.
Yeah, but also once you've whistled it on the floor, I don't think there was anything in the replay that made me go, oh, wow, they missed that. I just think he fouled him.
No, he did. Like, eventually, he did foul him. Like, yeah. The initial, you know, it was all ball to start, and then, you know, again.
I don't know enough about the specifics of that rule. To me, it looked like a foul.
I felt like this
and
year.
I think the only reason there's a discussion is because of when it happened.
Yeah, I think this year we have like a new interpretation of that rule.
Sure.
Because I never felt like the rule was that if you got the ball first, you were allowed to hit a guy on the hand. And then all of a sudden it started being called that way. I'm like, I don't remember this being a rule where you can foul a shooter as long as you don't, as long as you get the ball first. Like, yeah, if the ball's away, that's one thing, but I'm talking like the ball's still in hand. Like, if you foul somebody, you foul somebody. So,
I
find it really strange. Yeah.
Although I go back to, and this is just an example that's in my head. There are a billion examples. If you have your own, use your own here. I go back to Warriors-Pelicans in New Orleans in the 2015 playoffs. Steph hit a three in the corner to tie the game to send it to overtime. And he got clobbered on the play. It's like Anthony Davis and somebody else just took him out. Full-blown tackled him. Shot goes in. Ref after the game basically said, well, we didn't blow the whistle because he made the shot. If he hadn't made the shot, we would have blown the whistle. And I go back to that, and it's like, okay, if that's going to be the case in that scenario, and that if you're trying to say, hey, players are going to settle it, that's where the call on Shea, that's my hangup.
Yeah.
Is, okay, well, not really, that's the spot we're going to decide this game? And again, a foul is a foul is a foul. If you're going to blow the whistle, blow it. But man, that's a tough call.
Yeah.
That's a tough call in that spot.
Throughout that game, too, you heard people like the commentators were like, well, that's interesting that's a foul when what we saw on the other end or what we saw 2 minutes ago wasn't a foul.
I felt like we heard that a lot in the playoffs.
Well, it's everyone's trying to adjust to what this is, right? And so I still don't know how you're supposed to officiate it. I still don't know how you're supposed to be consistent. And to be honest, I don't think there is a lot of consistency. Like
there's definitely not.
Yeah. Even late in
those poor refs. I just have no idea.
The Minnesota game, right? The Minnesota Denver game. They're like, oh, you're gonna call a moving screen?
Mm-hmm.
After all the things that we just saw, you're gonna call a moving screen now? Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's weird to hear the commentators actually call it out as well because they're confused. We're confused. Everyone at home. You're like, okay, man, that was a moving screen. I'm not going to argue. But again, the play before where the dude gets taken in like three rows deep into the stands.
Right. No call.
Yeah, wild.
Well, because and good on the broadcaster because they're supposed to be informing, right?
Yeah.
Like that's they're enhancing the game experience by letting us know what is going on beyond just what our eyeballs are witnessing.
Yes.
And when you're a broadcaster, you're like, hey, you know what, bro? I don't know either. I don't know what to tell you.
You got me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's even the play, too, where, I think it was the OKC game where somebody went to the basket and they fully get crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't even close and they didn't call it, but he went up and hit the bottom of the backboard and the ball went out of bounds off of him, off the offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, that does look like it's off the offensive player. It was the OKC game because I remember Jason Kidd. But Jason Kidd's out of challenges. And you're like, okay, well, like, I don't know what you do there because, like, the guy went to the basket.
Yeah,
clearly has his hand on his shoulder.
Yeah.
He gets shoved under the basket and hits the bottom of the backboard. You're right. It's off of him. But it was actually a foul, so it's just totally bizarre.
Really, really weird thing. What I want to get to about these games, though, is two things. One, I'm also in on Minnesota as a contender going forward, Dallas showed me a lot in that series. So did OKC. They were both teams that, OKC less so because they were so freaking good this year, but Dallas definitely. We're going into these playoffs. I was of the mind like, okay, yeah, they made a nice run this year. They stayed out of the play-in after not making the play-in last year, but I don't know what this team looks like moving forward. I think they're going to be really freaking good moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the changing of the guard season.
Yeah.
Like, I think what we just saw, what we're seeing right now is like teams elevating that you were hoping would elevate, and you were kind of hoping the Kings would be with this group.
Sure.
And elevating with them, but they didn't reach that plateau.
Mm-hmm.
But to see some of these teams like take the step, like it's fun to see. This is like again, I don't care what city it's in. Everyone should be excited to see this Dallas Minnesota series. Like it might not be marquee, but you should be excited to see Anthony Edwards versus Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. You should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. It's good for the game, and it's good that OKC is getting better. It's good that you're seeing a team who went all the way to the beginning and has rebuilt itself back up the right way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm here for it because this is, you know, you don't want it just being like the same five teams every year.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't want to see four NBA finals in a row with the Cavs and Warriors again. That's just not good for the game. It's stale.
Sure.
And so I think this is a good thing.
Yeah. Definitely. We're going to have two new teams in the finals in consecutive years for the first time in, God, I don't even know how long.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
But anyways, really excited for the rest of the NBA playoffs. There's one more thing I need to get to from this Mavs game, but it ties in with the Kings offseason stuff that we're going to do next. The Southwest Division is next up in our group of divisions we're going through. Each division, each team, figuring out what players the Kings could, should go after this offseason. That's all coming up next on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports. Later.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I'm Kyle, he's James. They're Jiffy Lube, and they sponsor the show. Shout out. Hey, really quick, I want to play the audio that we have from post-game stuff last night, because I want to be able to use my buttons.
Okay.
Is that okay? Can we do that?
Of course.
Okay, great. So, I'm going to play this audio from last night's post game of the Timberwolves win over the Nuggets. We will dive fully into the audio later. I just want to play it now because I have drops from each of them that I want to be able to use.
Okay.
Then we'll get back to the thing that I wanted to talk about from the Mavs, and then we'll do our Kings offseason stuff. So yesterday, after the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets 98-90 in a game 7, if you missed it, the Nuggets led that game by 20. Here's Michael Malone in his press conference after the game.
Next question, man. The season's over. That's what's hard. Being up 20. The season's over. You don't understand that. The season's over. It's hard. Stupid ass questions.
To be fair. Hey, how are you absorbing this loss? That's a tough question.
Yeah. Okay, so look, I think everyone needs to understand that these are raw moments.
Yes.
It's raw moments, definitely, for everyone. And Michael Malone walked up into his pregame press conference wearing like a 2023 NBA championship shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Like they thought that they were moving on. They thought that he was trying to like get his guys pumped up and ready to play, and like, he's disappointed just like everyone else is. And he's looking at the same thing we are. Like, how do you get better the next year?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make changes? And, you know, are the Minnesota Timberwolves your version of the Sacramento Kings, New Orleans Pelicans?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you get past this team? And maybe you can. And as long as you don't face them again in the playoffs, maybe you're okay.
Yeah.
But like this is going to be a team that's around for a while. And I think it's just anytime you're in those situations, it's hard because you do get thrown some questions that just kind of, you're like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to answer that?
Yeah,
I'm angry. I'm pissed. And now you're going to see it. And now I look like the a-hole for sitting here saying things that now everyone's looking at me like, oh, you shouldn't have acted that way. It's like, well, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
It's raw.
Stupid ass questions.
All right. That's number two. We'll dive back into that a little bit later. Anthony Edwards got the headset after the game, was talking to the Inside the NBA crew. And Charles Barkley, here, we've got the whole exchange for you.
I have not been to Minnesota in probably 20 years.
Bring your ass.
Hey, hey.
Bring your ass.
Incredible. Every big postseason run needs a phrase.
Yep.
Bring your ass.
Is now Minnesota's.
Okay.
You got the governor making jokes online about how he's going to add it to the state sign when you cross the state line. I'm sure it'll be on t-shirts.
Welcome to Minnesota. Bring your ass.
I just
bring your ass.
Incredible. And then Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns are hilarious in their postgame presses. If you've not watched them, they are very funny. Somebody asked them, basically said like, hey, you guys have been, you know, you guys missed a step here.
Yeah.
You're usually supposed to like lose before you make this kind of jump. And here's how they responded.
And usually in NBA history, it says you have to lose and lose big before you win. What is it about this team that says
we lost last year?
Yeah, but that's different. You have to lose at a bigger stage. Usually, teams. Usually
it's the playoffs. We lost last year.
We lost the last 2 years.
God damn! How much more we got to lose?
Yeah, how much you want us to lose?
We're losing for 20 years.
I mean, that's just the truth, dog.
God damn! Are
you right?
Yeah,
I do think I want to I don't want to have this because I want to dive deep on this a little bit later.
Yeah,
but this idea of these steps and these trajectories for teams, and are the Timberwolves on the normal trajectory or do they skip a step? Because to me, I didn't necessarily think they skipped a step, but we can talk about that. Okay. It did give us these.
That's just the truth, dog.
We lost last year.
Yeah, I can't wait. Anyways,
stupid ass questions.
I think the Mavericks did something that we offered a really good example. I wrote down blueprint. That's not the word I'm looking for because blueprint implies that the Kings should follow it very specifically. And I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Yeah.
But I think they illustrated what we're talking about when we talk about Kings offseason acquisitions, whether it's free agents, trade, or otherwise. And we're going to do that here with the Southwest Division in a minute. But I think they did a really good job of identifying very specific pieces that will help their team. And it illustrates something that I need certainly to keep an eye on and think about when we're going through this list of players. And in a vacuum, adding Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington and drafting Derek Lively and having Derek Jones Jr., like in a vacuum, that's not that inspiring of a group of players.
Nope.
But with what Dallas needed from their role players around Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, those additions this offseason and midseason were such a massive reason that they got to the Western Conference Finals. And I think that's something to keep in mind where when we're talking about the Kings, yeah, maybe a player comes up that you think like, hey, what did that guy scored 8 points a game last year and played in 36 games. But you got to think about how they fit with the Kings specifically. And I thought Dallas did a really nice job of that.
Okay, so here's the wrinkle I want to add to.
Please.
I mean, because you bring up that, like, look, Daniel Gafford and even, you know, throw Derek Jones Jr. in this and PJ Washington. These aren't just players who, like you can look at them and say, okay, I know what they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can talk about, again, Grant Williams and PJ Washington aren't that much different,
no
right?
Doubt.
And Reggie Bullock and all the other players, Dorian Finney-Smith and all the, like, they're not that different than Derek Jones Jr. and Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively are basically the same player, right?
Yeah.
I'll add this too. Most of these players came from losing teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, the Chicago Bulls were one of the most disappointing teams in the league. That's last year, and that's where they signed Derrick Jones Jr. from as a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
The Charlotte Hornets are one of the worst basketball teams in the world.
And they're a bad organization.
They're a horrible organization. They probably will remain that way for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go pluck like their third best scorer or fourth best player, something like that, you can't magically think he's going to walk in the door and become this kind of impactful player.
Nope.
And then you look at Daniel Gafford, who is on the most unserious team in the history of unserious teams.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And so it's not just that you went out and got three guys. You went out and got three guys from situations that you couldn't even really give a true, like, how good are they?
Yeah.
Like, Daniel Gafford's stats easily could have been inflated by 3 points and, like, three or four rebounds,
mm-hmm.
because no one else on his team is very good at doing anything outside of putting the ball in the basket here and there.
Good point.
And that no one else on that team rebounds. And so, like, to have these guys, like, come to Dallas and just find a way to mesh is so incredibly impressive, because I think it does show a pathway for mm-hmm. the Kings. It's not just about the type of player and the style of player, and it sometimes it is, hey, a guy in a bad situation doesn't have to be looked at as just a guy in a bad situation that probably, you know, who's just gotten so used to losing that he's mm-hmm. not going to be able to help you,
mm-hmm.
or who doesn't know who he is. I think the one thing about PJ Washington and all three of these guys, they all know who they are as players.
Mm-hmm.
They at least they had done that for themselves. They had developed who they were, 3-and-D power forward, you know, a rim running, shot blocking,
yes.
rebounding big man,
mm-hmm.
a 3-and-D wing that has gotten better as a 3-point shooter, but really is known more for his athleticism and his length,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So, but they are who they are. They've refined who they are the best they can, where so many young players, they get stuck on bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
They get done with their first contract and even part of their second contract, and they still think they can be an all-star.
Yeah.
And they're just not.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, bro, like, I don't know how to tell you, but if you're not going to figure out how to be a role player and how to fit in,
mm-hmm.
you're just not going to make it.
Yep.
And these three guys have figured that part out, and to have them step in and then just find a way to mesh with this group, really, really impressive.
Daniel Gafford, to your point, played 5 fewer minutes per game with Dallas than he did with Washington. Averaged the same amount of field goal attempts, 6.5 to 6.4, but his field goal percentage went up 9 points.
Yeah.
He went from 69%, which is nice, to 78% with Dallas. His rebound numbers went down like a full rebound, but again, he's playing 5 fewer minutes, and his assist numbers were about the same. His block numbers, almost the same. In 5 fewer minutes, and he scored about the same.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's about that role and finding a role that fits. And I'm going to say this because I think this is what the Mavericks did, because I think that's a great point of the situations that these guys all came from. I think what the Mavericks did, and I think what we should be doing, and what I think the Kings should be doing, is looking at these players and going, okay, what can they do? What are they good at?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know. I don't necessarily need to know if a player is just an atrocious defender and there's just no way he is a turnstile, he's going to get targeted, and there's just, you can't keep him on the floor because he's so bad at defense. Okay, fine. But if you tell me, yeah, this guy hustles his ass off and he's 6'8 and he shoots 35% from three, it's like, great, I can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something that Dallas did that the Kings should be definitely keeping in mind. Again, not necessarily looking at players in a vacuum, but looking very specifically at how they fit here.
Yeah, and I would say too, like guys like PJ Washington, it's not like this is a bad player. We've seen him for years. He's torn up the Kings a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a big difference between being a good player on a horrible team
mm-hmm.
and finding a way to seamlessly fit into a team that goes to the Western Conference Finals.
Right, being like a fourth option instead yeah. of a second.
Or even a third option. In yeah. this playoff series, he's been yeah, a third option.
Yeah, you're right. He's very good.
Yeah, I mean, he's even been the first option in like two or three games and, yeah. and helped them win games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like super impressive just how these guys fit. But also, like, look, I'm someone who would never typically say this, but shout out to Jason Kidd for yeah. taking a group of players on the fly and figuring out a way to get them to buy in 100% to the role that they're playing, and also not leaving guys behind like Derek Lively. Mm-hmm. Like saying, hey, man, we still need you, but Daniel Gafford is just a more seasoned version of you. I need you to bring more energy off the bench. If you pick up a couple of extra fouls, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I need you to go out there and play like a dude with your hair on fire, which is exactly what he does.
He was a plus 26 in game six, Derek Lively was. In a game they won by 1 point. He was a plus 26 in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
15 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, a block, and 12 points.
Yeah, and even in this season's playoffs, I'm looking at Derek Jones Jr. and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 games out of the 13 that they've played, he scored in double figures, mm-hmm. including a 22, a 19, and a 17 in the final three games of that series. And this is a guy who averages for his career like 6 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's stepping up in a big moment. And I think that that's really good to see. And he's not a young player who's stepping up in a big moment, but he's a player who, you know, is finding his way.
Yeah. Yeah. They Dallas had throughout that series, it was Luka, Kyrie had some up and down moments, but like you said, PJ Washington stepped up.
Mm-hmm.
PJ Washington falling off a little bit. Derek Jones Jr. steps up. Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford combined for 22 points, 22 rebounds, and 4 assists in game 6.
Mm.
Just kind of all hands on deck. I thought it was a really impressive performance by the Mavericks. And let's start with them as we begin our Southwest Division dive. We're going through each team in each division and trying to identify the players the Kings might try to go after, be able to go after, players that fit with the Kings who could potentially be available this offseason. So let's start with Dallas, and let's start with Derek Jones Jr. He is an unrestricted free agent, and to me, this is, he would fit with the Kings the same way he fit with Dallas.
Well, I totally agree.
But he also might have just gotten some money.
Yeah, I would say, like, up until the last three games, like, he was a nice player on a good team. But all of a sudden, he showed you that there's flashes of more.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard because, like this is a guy who just turned 27, so he fits your age arc. He's a guy who's not going to make a ton of money, but I would be surprised if he didn't get $6 to $8 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe half or maybe a little bit more of your mid-level exception. He's coming off a year where he made a league minimum, $3.3 million. So he would love to get paid, I'm going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a guy that the Sacramento Kings made a run at multiple times. So in 2020, that's the coming out of the bubble in the shortened season. Monty McNair had the first interview with him via Skype to try to get him to sign with the Kings, and he ended up going to the Portland Trailblazers. This is a guy that the Kings have tried to get in the past, and I wouldn't be shocked if they went after him again because he's still not like a high value player, but he's also going to the Western Conference Finals with a team, and he might just end up re-upping with them.
Sure.
You know, and again, they're not going to be able to pay him just like anyone else. Like most teams aren't going to be able to pay him because Dallas is like in a similar cap situation to most teams. But yeah, definitely a player that the Kings should be looking at. It's just I'm not sure that he moves the needle so much.
No. Yeah. He's definitely one of those just nice role players. I think he falls under the bench upgrade category for sure.
He could start for you, but
yeah, but I think with the Kings he probably is better suited off the bench, but
maybe.
That depends a little bit on what the rest of their roster looks like. You also wrote down Dante Exum, and I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they wind up moving Davion Mitchell this offseason, which they may or may not, I have no idea. But I think Dante Exum would be a really nice Davion Mitchell replacement as like a defense first guard who you don't, I think, especially with the way he developed offensively this year, I think he hit what, like 49% of his threes? Something like that?
Yeah, it's something crazy.
So obviously, that's not a sustainable clip, but if he has improved as a three-point shooter where he can credibly hang out in the corner and somebody has to stand near him, you feel okay when he has the ball in his hands that he's going to make the right play offensively. I like that idea too.
Yeah, you know, Dante Exum had so much talent when he was young, and then he had the catastrophic knee injuries.
Yep.
And I think he had like an elbow injury too, something weird.
Mm-hmm.
But this was his best season as a pro, pretty much. Averaged 7.8 points, 2.9 assists, 2.7 rebounds. He's on a low budget, like $3 million contract, so I don't think there's any way you're going to be able to get him out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. He's only 28 years old. He'll turn 29 in July, But that's pretty wild too to think about that he's a player that he feels like he's been around forever and even played in Europe for a couple of seasons and he's still only that age.
His rookie year was 2014-15.
Mm.
That's insane. That's so long ago and he's not even 30.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, if for whatever reason the Mavs want to move him, then yeah, for sure. Go try and get him.
Yep.
But I would be at that price, I doubt it. Let's stay in Texas with the Rockets.
Mm.
What an interesting team. I don't know what their offseason looks like. Are they just running it back? Are they going to move a player? You have Jayshon Tate written down here. Are they going to move him? Are they going to move Tari Eason? Do they feel like they need to keep Dylan Brooks, who is a player I think that I have done a 180 on whether he'd fit with the Kings? I could take him for sure. But again, I don't know how willing the Rockets are going to be to move any of these guys.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, too, because you got to remember they have, like, a top four pick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't just have, like, they have young talent all over the place. So, I don't know. Fred VanVleet's clearly not going anywhere. He makes $43 million this year.
Yeah.
And
that's so nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, yeah, you know, they signed Dylan Brooks to this, like, four-year deal that pays him, what is it, $90 million over 4 years, something close to that. $85 million, $86 million, something like that. If you look at him as the next 3 years, it's possible that they could look at it and go, okay, look, we can go get another asset for him. But the team is kind of built in a weird way. You know, Jabari Smith is your answer at the power forward. You've got Alperen Şengün at the center position. You got Amen Thompson that you're going to have to fit in somewhere at the mm-hmm. at one of the forward positions. Yeah. So you start adding up all of these players, and then Jayshon Tate, I don't think there's any way that they're going to exercise his team option at $7 million. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to be available. He's a little bit older than you would think for a guy who hasn't been in the league that long. But then the other guy that I have a real question about is, you know, there's no way that you're going to get Cam Whitmore out of there, which it's too bad because Cam Whitmore's a stud.
Baller.
But I think Tari Eason... He only played in 22 games. He's a guy that might be on the bubble of how he fits there, especially if you look at this year's draft and the talent that's in the top four and where those players play and how they would fit in and the fact that you have Jalen Green and you have your backcourt set with him and Fred VanVleet. Like, how do you continue to build this thing? Where do you fit all of these pieces? And does Tari Eason fit into that? He's the type of player...
Man.
One of the things the Kings, I think, in this offseason should go get is a player like this, whether it's him, whether it's Jared Vanderbilt, whether it's...
More athletic Trey Lyles.
Brandon Clark. Yeah, like one of these guys that just like brings so much energy and chaos at the power forward center position.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where I'm with you. You can make the case for Jayshon Tate. You can make a case for Tari Eason. You can definitely make the case for Dylan Brooks. It was 4 years, $86 million and $1, which I thought was kind of funny. That decelerates over time, though.
Yeah, he has a declining scale contract.
22.2 this year, 21.1 next year, 19.9 the year after that, in the 26-27 season. And that's where, I don't know if the Rockets would be willing to move him. Or if they're like, nope, he is such a foundational piece of what we're doing, especially defensively,
mm-hmm.
can't move off of him. Tari Eason, I think every team in the league would want a player like that. But again, you don't know how Houston is viewing him. He missed most of last year.
Yeah.
He's talking a bunch of trash to the Warriors as they were trying to chase them down for the play-in. I don't... Is that something that they enjoy?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. If the Kings can go get him, though, yes.
Yeah, I would put Jayshon Tate in sort of that weird category too of players that, I mean, he's 28, but he plays a physical style that the Kings just lack.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's a tank.
I wouldn't hate it as a bench upgrade type to go see it, you know, take a flyer on a guy. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be cheap. He really played his way out of the rotation last year.
Yeah.
Only 16 minutes a game, 65 games, average 4 points a game. He's a player that I think could help a team, especially as like an enforcer and like physical basket getter off the bench.
Mm. Yeah. I'm with that for sure. Can we fit one more in here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. The Spurs.
Yep.
Let's start with, I hate this. I'm looking at your list right now. Let's start with Keldon Johnson.
Yeah.
He is a name that has been connected to the Kings. It feels like every time we talk about potential trades and potential moves. I think he's a nice player. Is he an upgrade in your starting lineup? I don't know. He's one of those players that when you look at his numbers, is that a product? And this is like we were talking about with the Mavs. Is that a product of, hey, the Spurs just haven't been very good? And there's not been a great supporting cast? And he's just, like, he was on Team USA. He won a gold medal. He's been around. But does he come to Sacramento and suddenly help? And you start to see his numbers uptick? I don't know.
I kind of look at him. I get the
fit.
Yeah, I mean, he can play small. He can play the power. He's only 6'5", but he plays bigger than 6'5".
Definitely.
I kind of look at him in the same way I look at PJ Washington. Like, super, super similar player.
Yeah.
And so if you could get him in the right situation, I mean, we're talking about a guy who averaged 22 points a game last season before Victor Wembanyama showed up, who's averaged 5.5 rebounds per game, who, you know, is almost 3 assists per game over the last two. He reminds me of Harrison Barnes 2.0, which is, you know, that's not a bad thing, though. Like, this is a player that I think that could step in. I guess the other guy, player you could kind of compare him to a little bit. He's not as good an offensive rebounder, but Carl Landry. You know, just a bucket getter. And that's fine. Like, I think the Kings could have more of these. And I think he would be an upgrade over a guy like a Trey Lyles. Like, I think they're both really solid players, but I think he would be a better version of, and younger.
Sure.
But, yeah.
I kind of feel like if you slot in Keldon Johnson at the... God, I don't know if he can play the four. He's probably a little small to play the four.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you can replace Harrison Barnes directly with Keldon Johnson, because I don't think there's enough size there. Like you said, he plays bigger than 6'5", but I don't know that you want him starting at the four.
Yeah.
But I think from a production standpoint, that's a more reliable option, where, you know, night in and night out, yeah, he's going to go get you 5 to 8 rebounds. Yeah, you know he's going to go get you 12 to 15 points. I don't think there would be a huge question about what you're going to get from Keldon Johnson, whether he's in your starting lineup or coming off the bench. Yeah. He's done both with San Antonio. Yeah.
And I don't know if San Antonio's willing to give him up. I think he's part of the support system that they're putting in place for Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
I also, for this team, Trey Jones would be a huge bench upgrade. He's on a 1-year $9.1 million contract. And just to spite my partner here, I threw Zach Collins, 2-year $34.7 million. Like, look, I don't love watching him play either, but, like, the pointy elbows and the physicality and the, you know, like, the sort of stretch 5 game that he has, I'm okay with him. As a player, just the injuries and, like, personality-wise, I think he's kind of an odd fit.
That's non-winning behavior in our building.
It's absolutely not. If Zach Collins winds up in Sacramento, I'm going to have some explaining to do. It's fine. All right, we have the Pelicans to get to. We have the Grizzlies to get to. We will continue discussing that. Plus, I want to get to dive into some of this post-game sound from the Nuggets and Timberwolves game yesterday, because I thought that exchange between Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns...
we lost last year.
I thought that exchange was really, really interesting in terms of just talking about a team's trajectory. So we will continue diving into the Kings offseason. More NBA playoff stuff coming up, and the 49ers started OTAs today. What does that all mean? We'll discuss it next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.